Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. We are going toward the end of the year. We couldn't be more excited. And you know, like a lot of people post-Thanksgiving, we're sort of loosening our figurative belts here. This episode...
taking our ties off.
Yeah, this episode has
dropping trowel.
This episode needs a disclaimer, fellow ridiculous historians. It contains some pretty bawdy info, well beyond PG-13. All true. As such, it may not be appropriate for all the kiddos and the loved ones in the crowd.
I would say definitely not appropriate for anyone. It's like what they say at the beginning of South Park. It's just this one is not for anyone. No, you shouldn't listen to it. No, I'm kidding. If we aroused your curiosity, well, carry on.
So be it. Yes. Shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
What?
Ben Bolin, you are Mr. Noel Brown.
Design.
We are joined with a returning guest, the one, the only, Alex Circa, famous for having terrible taste in podcasts. Thank you for being here, Alex.
Happy to be back.
Yes. We've talked about this one for a while. And this is our episode about James Joyce. As you could probably tell from the title, we're exploring a bit of this guy's background beyond his larger-than-life status as a literary icon.
And famous eye patch wearer, right? Isn't he an eye patch guy?
Terrible eyes. Poor guy struggled with his eyesight.
Well, I always remember, like, you know, there's like all those kind of, I guess they have them in all of the locations of Barnes & Noble. In the cafe of most Barnes & Noble, there's a giant portrait of James Joyce, and he's got like an eye patch and his glasses on over the eye patch. And man, if only those Barnes & Noble folks knew what this guy got up to. Maybe they do. And they're just trying to, I don't know, expose people to some of the darker sides of sexuality through their, you know, Starbucks decor.
That's how they get you. Mm-hmm. That's our new moral panic, 2024. You heard it here first. Yeah, it's weird. The last time I was in Dublin, I realized that no matter what store you go to in Dublin, they are going to inevitably sell two things. One, some copy of a James Joyce book, and two, some sort of spirit, some sort of liquor. Usually, weirdly enough, if they sell James Joyce books, they also sell the whiskey Jameson. Like stationery stores, dude. Like the lawn care hardware store is also saying, hey, do you want a copy of Dubliners? Do you want to be drunk while you trim the hedges?
You're going to need to drink this entire bottle of Jameson to wrap your head around Ulysses. Because, man, that's a tough read. And yet, I believe, considered to be one of the greatest works of literature in the English language. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of eluded me a little bit. I don't know how you feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, Joyce was not as prolific as some other authors considered part of the Western canon. But to your point, Noel, his work did inform, inspire, and continues to challenge and frankly confuse millions of people throughout the world today. He's got a sort of dichotomy about him. There's the public image on one hand, isolated, somewhat savant-esque character imprisoned by his own genius, hiding away, writing stories. One of the, you'll enjoy this one. One of the famous recurring stories about James Joyce is that he would agonize, dude, over three words. And that would be his day. And he famously, let's see, he famously tried to burn stuff he had written, and his partner, Nora, who we will learn a lot more about today, saved stuff from the fire. One time he did a drive-by to drop off a manuscript to his editor and like literally ran by the editor's house, threw it on the doorstep, and ran away weeping. He was in that world.
Complex fellow, contained multitudes.
That's the public image, but we're talking about another one.
Boy, howdy. Let me tell you what I found. I mean, I like to think of myself as not particularly a prudish person, but some of this stuff had me blushing just reading the outline, some of the excerpts from this guy's letters to his beloved, which we're going to get to. James Joyce, to start with first things first, was born in Ireland. James Augustine Aloysius, which is one of my favorite names. Joyce, Dublin, February 2nd, 1882. He was the eldest of 10 children in his family to survive infancy. As we know, a lot of infant mortality back in the day. And at age six, he went to a boarding school, a Jesuit boarding school called, Clongowes Wood College, which was described as the Eton of Ireland. I don't think I understand that reference, Ben. What is Eton referencing?
So Eton is referencing one of the most prestigious colleges, institutes of higher learning in the United Kingdom. It's in Berkshire, England.
So eventually, James and his brother, Stanislaus.
They're killing it with the names. Well done, Joyce family.
They both get admitted for free to this Jesuit grammar school called Belvedere College. From there, he goes on to University College, Dublin, and also studies under the Jesuits, which, of course, is a very, you know, stoic religious order.
When you drop kick your jacket and you came through the door. I love Mr. Belvedere.
Oh, Mr. Belvedere.
It did age well. Yeah.
Drop kick your jacket?
Uh-huh.
I never knew the lyrics of that song. Wow.
It's weird to me that I learned them. But,
I know you're a fan of sitcom theme tunes that tell the tale of the story before even the first scene.
You know me well, Noel.
He actually listens to them by himself when we're not around.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I know that from my surveillance stuff that I put into his new apartment.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you,
Brandy, for the assist.
Sure, sure. And so James Joyce studies languages the way that we study that Halcyon era of sitcom themes that explain themselves. He, without hyperbole, this guy reads absolutely everything he could get his hands on. He does, however, prioritize reading the stuff the Jesuits don't want him to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does kind of ring true. On October 31st, 1902, he graduates with a bachelor degree. And all of the while, he's just writing away, writing. Britannica puts it thusly. He wrote verses and experimented with short prose passages that he called epiphanies, a word that Joyce used to describe his accounts of moments when the real truth about some person or object was revealed.
A little esoteric. A little esoteric, baby Jay. He also is, like many people in this situation, many artists then and now, he is struggling to find a way to pay the bills while he is pursuing what he feels is his true noble vocation. He dabbles with medicine. He studies at the Saint Genevieve Library. His mother falls ill in 1903. And so in April of that year, he returns to Dublin and he moves around town trying like different occupations. And just like we see with so many other very talented people, he's like a compass and he's swinging wildly. It takes a second for him to find his true north. Around this time, he starts writing an autobiographical novel. It's called Stephen Hero, and we'll talk about that more in a sec. And it's largely ignored by both him and the world. His big break doesn't occur until 1904 when he gets his first writing job.
That's right. He gets a gig as a working writer for the Irish Homestead. He gets paid, I believe, a British pound per short story that he submits to this publication. Then in June of 1904, June 10th, he meets the love of his life, one Nora Barnacle.
Real name.
Sounds like a made-up character in a James Joyce novel. And yeah, we've already hinted their relationship does take a bit of a turn toward the kinky.
Saucy.
Very saucy indeed. We're going to get there. The Irish Homestead, Ben, you pointed out in the outline, is something of a Reader's Digest type publication. So not something you would typically think of containing pornographic material. And he wasn't writing this kind of stuff. You know, he saved those types of missives for his personal, private, secret, nighttimey times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to wonder what he would think about hearing our podcast today. I think it would like it.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day, whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade. At The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. You're absolutely on the money there, Noel. The stories he's writing, at this position in the turn of the century, we could think of him like a blogger, almost like a paid commentator or reviewer of some sort. He's not going to become a millionaire off this, obviously, but there is something beautiful to making a living, even in part, off of one's creative acts, whether that be sculpture, music, literature, dance, you name it. This is where he starts writing these stories, these short stories that are going to later be collected and published in an anthology called Dubliners in 1914. And Dubliners contains one of the most universally worshipped or looked up to short stories in the Western canon, which is The Dead. If you haven't read it, if you find James Joyce to be intimidating because of Ulysses or because of that other thing he wrote, Finnegan's Wake, often confused with a book, we can promise you that I walked down the street for that one.
Ouch.
We can promise you that Dubliners is much more accessible, and The Dead is just, it's a wonderful story.
Yeah, I have read not a word of James Joyce's work, so this is good advice for me.
You have read. We'll get to it.
Well, I've read some of his words, yes, but not in any of his official output. So, you know, he does progress, I guess you could call it, or perhaps devolve. But no, let's say progress. His work gets much more complex and esoteric and experimental, really. I mean, it's my understanding that Ulysses just, it kind of messes with the form of what a book should be, and like how, you know, perspective and all of the things. There aren't characters per se. I mean, there are, but it's like it's all shifting perspectives. And I mean, how would you describe the way Ulysses reads, Ben, for anyone who maybe hasn't even attempted it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ulysses. I've got to give a shout out to the professors who ushered me through several courses in James Joyce. I needed a book club, basically, to read Ulysses, because it is an epic novel. It expands throughout languages. The story it depicts is actually, in terms of A to Z plot, it's pretty straightforward, but it has a ton of allusions, a ton of format breaks that hadn't really happened before. And it has a stream of consciousness technique that I think that's probably one of the biggest speed bumps for people to get over, right? Oh, and there are a ton of puns in there, by the way. Hashtag no pun left behind. Mm-hmm. Joyce may have started that, and honestly, he could have pumped his brakes just a little bit, I'm being
possibly
honest.
So he does, you know, try in vain for quite some time to get Ulysses published, and he eventually does in 1922 when he's 40. Before it came out as an entire, you know, collected book, he publishes it in little installments, which is something we also know happened pretty commonly, in a publication, U.S. literary magazine called The Little Review.
Mm-hmm.
It's adorable sounding. And the chapter that became known as Nausicaa features the novel's main character, Leopold Bloom, doing a little self-care, a little Ooh. Self-help, a little self-love on a beach while staring at a 17-year-old beach dweller, a girl named Gertie McDowell.
Slightly, nothing there is wrong at all.
Slightly Nabokov, right? Shades of Nabokov and Lolita. Yeah, he in just this excerpt, this is something a lot of people get messed up. Just this excerpt, this Nausicaa, as you mentioned, Noel, that alone gets an enormous amount of controversy because, you know, it's super wrong. Not to undermine you there, Max, but obviously that was sarcasm. This is not cool stuff. It gets published in 1920. Again, just this excerpt. And this catches the attention of the daughter of a lawyer in New York. And this person refers the installment, Nausicaa, to something called the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice. A moral panic occurs. A prosecution starts rolling.
Yeah, and I believe Nausicaa is actually a character in the Odyssey by mm-hmm. Homer.
Yep, you're right.
Ulysses is a character in the Iliad, right?
And the Nausicaans are a species of aliens in Star Trek, the ones who actually impale Picard through the heart when he's a young man.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also Miyazaki's Nausicaa of the Valley of the Winds.
And the Valley of the Winds, which is where I'm most familiar with that name from. But yeah, it was so interesting when you start to dig into some of the stuff, how often literary references, you know, are very, very important to understand a piece of pop culture a little more deeply. I actually watched The Killing of the Sacred Deer. Yorgos Lanthimos film with my partner last night. And that is a reference to some stuff that happens, battles between gods. Like, I believe The Killing of the Sacred Deer refers to I think it's Artemis, who is like the goddess of the hunt, and an opposing god, a sacred deer from her forest is killed, and therefore a sacrifice is demanded. And they don't really go over the top in the movie to make those references. They just use the names, and there's a reference to like an essay that one of the characters writes about that. But when you really dig in deeper, you understand kind of where a lot of the symbolism lies. And I think that's true here as well.
Yeah, definitely true of Ulysses. True of a lot of Joyce's work. Stephen Hero becomes a thing. He repurposes it, by the way, into a thing called A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, which is 10-10, no notes, the best mention of a moo cow in all of literature. Probably also the only mention. But the editors of this place you mentioned, the Little Review, they get taken to court and they get fined, and they're being prosecuted for publishing a work of obscenity. And this ruling meant that publishers in the United States were prohibited from publishing Ulysses, because the idea was something like, well, we cannot define pornographic content, but we know it. We know it when we witness it, and this Irishman is severely off the rails.
He is indeed. So it's not until 1922 that an independent publisher in Paris decides to go to bat for Joyce and his work Ulysses, and publishes the complete novel. Sylvia Beach, I believe, is the name of the independent publisher there.
And they had to be independent because, look, even now when you read this thing, there are some very racy passages. Like, one of the biggest misconceptions about Ulysses as a work is that it is boring, or it is slow or tepid or dry. It is none of those things. It is a cavalcade of this on top of this, which also references this, which also means this, and watch out for this part. And there's a lot of extremely sexually explicit content there. Leopold Bloom, the main character, explores his sexual boundaries in a brothel. His wife, Molly, fantasizes about having really rough sex with a paramour. Mm-hmm. And this is all amid a huge collection of literary references, obscure religious quotations, trivia that just struck Joyce as interesting while he was writing. It goes on and on and on.
Well, and you know, taking into account his Jesuit education and upbringing, and knowing, you know, how a lot of those schools, of course, impose religious, components to the educational process, it seems like he was balking against that, or at least pushing back against that. And so a lot of the stuff in these books, or in this one in particular, could be considered pretty sacrilegious or even blasphemous, you know. There's a character named Buck Mulligan, who he specifically uses as a way of mocking some of the rituals of the Catholic Church. And you got to think that Bloom, the Leopold Bloom character, is kind of Joyce writing about himself, like to a degree. Because, I mean, there's a lot of him and his wife, Molly, are, again, talking about all of this, you know, kind of rough sex type stuff. But he also muses about being fisted in a brothel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that part's like that. True.
Yeah, yeah, it's in there.
James Joyce was a guy with a great personal interest in the human Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it definitely broke ground, like we said, in terms of like what does a novel entail? Like, what is the form of a novel? So he was doing that, likely, you know, introducing a lot of these words too. I mean, like, he's dropping the F-bomb repeatedly, you know, mm-hmm. As a way of referring to sex. And I can't imagine that, you know, with the censorship of the time, that would have been something that was out there, you know, in printed form. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not to say that I'm, you know, necessarily saying that Joyce is the one who introduced swearing into the vernacular, but as popular an author as he became and as lauded an author as he became, you can't deny that he certainly probably helped spread some of that stuff.
Absolutely. And helped break down again the somewhat false dichotomy of the literary world and the world of lived experience. A lot of people who would drop F-bombs left and right, they would be scandalized to read that same language in a novel, you know? And let's keep in mind, this is not too far after the novel finally experienced some sort of legitimization. Before then, the novel and, gosh, even theater, they were considered low arts. They were considered synonymous with grifting. And in the case of theater, they were sometimes considered synonymous with sex work. It was a very, very different environment. And Ulysses is a very, very different book. I love that you pointed out format. You know, all of a sudden you turn a page and we're in a screenplay or a script format. Another time you turn a page and it's the front page of a newspaper. That didn't really happen in novels before.
Well, and that could be a scandal of its own, you know, because I mean, the gatekeepers of literature, you know, tended to be very staunch in their, like, you know, interpretation of what a novel should be, what a play should be. And it would be considered pretty, you know, I guess blasphemous toward the art of literature, of writing, to mess with that, to dare to say, who are you, James Joyce, to try to, you know, upset the apple cart here and reinvent the wheel. That is not how we do business. But, you know, that's why characters like him or figures like him are kind of considered to be iconoclasts. You know, that word in and of itself, I think, points to people who break the mold and who refuse to be pigeonholed. And I think that's why he's very important, because he created a framework for experimentation, you know, in form and in voice.
Mm-hmm. And in what was considered allowable discourse, right?
Decent.
Literary discourse. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, we got to give credit where it's due. Ulysses was not the first modernist novel, or it wasn't at least the only one to combine this experimental quality with sexual content. D.H. Lawrence wrote The Rainbow. That was also censored as obscene. A lot of books were getting censored, poems and plays as well. But this visceral reaction of the reading public in a very real way shaped 20th century literature, and therefore literature in 2023 as we know it today. It wasn't until like 1934 that U.S. courts got a little more chill with regards to Ulysses. They lifted their ban that year, but the debate around what can and cannot be said, perhaps more importantly, what should and should not be considered literature, that continues today.
You know, it makes sense that it was the French that really were willing to roll the dice here, because in 1928, a novella by Georges Bataille was released in France, and it's called The Story of the Eye.
And that involves
some very, you know, sadistic and overtly sexual writing. You know, there's a really great lyric in an Of Montreal song where he's talking about meeting a woman at a Swedish festival. He says, standing at a Swedish festival, I need a woman who could appreciate Georges Bataille, standing at a Swedish festival discussing the story of the eye.
I remember
the eye is used as a sexual device in that book.
And that that novella, I think the principal characters are also teenagers, just to give you a heads up on that one, folks. I mean, look, we can say Joyce is crucial for his challenging or his expansion of expected format, accepted topics of conversation. But as anyone who has read Ulysses knows, and again, it is a really good book. The hype is well deserved. It's worth it. As anyone who has read it knows, his sexual imagination was not just a fictional feint, to your point. Leopold Bloom and James Joyce have a little more in common than you might think. I keep going back to it. This point of dichotomy, I was not aware of this until I started studying the guy, but James Joyce apparently eschewed objectionable or obscene language in his IRL conversations. Like if you met him, he would get sauced and he might talk around or about body racy things, but he wasn't the type to use curse words. I guess he saved it for the page.
Oh boy, did he ever. Jeez Louise, we're going to get there. He does, in fact, pass away on January 13th of 1941 at 58 in Zurich, Switzerland. Throughout his career, he writes a play. To your point, Ben, he wasn't like mega prolific, but it's very interesting how, like, you know, several of the pieces of his works are just really have stood the test of time in terms of like being important pieces of literature. He wrote a play as well. He did a little bit of journalism, some reviewing kind of stuff. Three books of poetry. But it wasn't really until after he passed away that some of these private musings were unearthed and showed the extent to which he was willing to go in expressing some of his more off-the-menu sexual desires.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I,
yeah.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I just, I, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Yes, that's right. This literary legend, it turns out, was a dirty, dirty boy. You know, okay. Maybe the takeaway is be careful with your text messages and your correspondences. Let's go back to Nora Barnacle. Again, real name. Weird. He meets her on June 16th, 1904. It is the same date that he will later set Ulysses. Oh, and all of Ulysses, by the way, happens in a very short time period. They elope to Zurich in October of that year, but they go on to have kind of an unconventional relationship for their time. They're long-term partners, but they don't officially tie the knot until 1931. And there's this period in time where it's around 1909, James returns to Dublin, and he is hoping to get his anthology, Dubliners, published. So what better place to try to get people to publish that? His books are also, by the way, not sold at every store in Dublin yet. He's just some guy. And during his time in Dublin, trying to get Dubliners published, he writes to the love of his life, Nora, and he writes a lot. And he writes extensively, and we're talking multiple times a day. We're like, he is giving her sometimes like hourly updates on, I kid you not, how often he is committing the sin of Onan, they used to call it, pleasuring himself, masturbating. And we are, this is why we had such a disclaimer at the beginning. Went back, I pulled some excerpts of some of his letters, and the baffling thing is, these are not the dirtiest parts.
I think thus far we've managed to keep it
pretty
soft,
good. PG-13, yeah.
PG-13 plus, but this is the moment, fair listeners, where things go down the X-rated rabbit hole. I don't even think I can read some of this, man. I don't know. This is hard stuff. I guess let's just give it a go. Max, you're going to have your hands full. I think we got to at least do some creative bleeps here.
I'm just glad I'm not having to read it.
Yeah. Also, again, sorry, Alex, but thanks for coming on the show. We're going to do...
You really picked an interesting one to come on.
Oh, geez.
No, I did not mean that.
All right. So let's do it this way. We've got one main excerpt here. Again, this is not the dirtiest one, but Noel, why don't you do the honors for that first paragraph? I'll come in on the second.
Okay, Ben. I guess I'll play your games. Your wicked games.
Yeah. Wicked games. Good. That's good.
All right. I'm like, God, jeez.
I don't think you even do a voice on this
one. I'm not going to do a voice. No, I'm not. I did as you told me. You dirty little girl, and pulled myself off twice when I read your letter. I am delighted to see that you do like being fucked arseways. Yes, now, I can remember that night when I fucked you for so long backwards. It was the dirtiest fucking I ever gave you, darling. My prick was stuck up in you for hours, fucking in and out under your upturned rump. I felt your fat, sweaty buttocks under my belly. I don't even understand that logistically. And saw your flushed face and mad eyes. I'm flushed a little bit right now.
I know. I need this. Yeah. Charming guy. Wrote Ulysses.
It goes on.
And we'll count the beeps later. Thank you again,
farty
Max.
Princess.
He says, this is, again, just one excerpt. He says, continuing, At every fuck I gave you, your shameless tongue come bursting out through your lips, and if I gave you a bigger, stronger fuck than usual, fat, dirty farts came spluttering out of your backside. You had an arse full of farts that night, darling, and I fucked them out of you, big fat fellows, long windy ones, quick little merry cracks, and a lot of tiny little naughty fartings, ending in a long gush from your hole. It is wonderful to fuck a farting woman when every fuck drives one out of her. I think I would know Nora's fart anywhere. December 8th, 1909.
Oh, you know it anywhere. You'll love to see it. And then a very charming sign off.
Yes, same letter.
Good night, my little farting Nora. My dirty little bird. There is one lovely word, darling, you have underlined to make me pull myself off better. Write me more about that and yourself sweetly. Dirtier, dirtier.
And we don't have a lot of...
What's the word she underlined?
Yeah, we don't have a lot of correspondence in return. So we're reading the absence of it. But it seems like she was 10-10 on board, no notes. I mean, a lot of notes. But they were all like, yes and notes.
Yeah, and yes and. We did not do this topic or pull these excerpts. To Ben's point, these are some of the, if you can say, tamer passages.
They are.
You know, just for farts and giggles, which there's probably a lot of that going on in their bedroom. Because farts make you giggle. So I'm sorry. My imagination's running wild. But this is history. This is like stuff to be, you know, dissected and kind of like this really does point to a secret life of this very important, you know, literary figure.
Yeah.
The Paris Review, which is a fabulous publication. Yep. They wrote a really great article, really doing what I just said much better than we ever could here on the podcast. And it shows the depths of his... the depravity, the levels of just, you know, this stuff. I mean, this is modern sounding. This is really.
Sexy. Also,
yeah, exactly. This is like fan fiction, you know, and this is wild.
Also, I gotta say, objectively, you can tell he loves language. The poetic description of farts. Yes. You know, come on, there's a little Seussian in there, and then.
If we talked about, like, if you have a Alexa, you can ask Alexa to fart, and she'll say, do you want a little squeaky one? Mm-hmm. A big fat fellow? Long windy one? I swear to God, it's like out of this letter. It really has to be a reference. I'm not joking.
And James the man was far more base, it would seem, than Joyce the author. This is true. Why are we telling you this? First, farts are hilarious. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we always say, it's very important for this show. We always say we must humanize these figures who loom large in canon and history.
Done.
They're people just like you. We've humanized this guy. Well, let's humanize him just a little bit more. Again, we're loose at the end of the year. You might not know this, folks, because history kind of teaches us that people exist in isolation. That is not true. A lot of the great writers of this time, they hung out with each other. They kicked it the way that me and Noel and Max and Alex, you're invited too, might kick it after work. Joyce was a huge fan of the American writer, Ernest Hemingway. Ernest Hemingway had some,
proclivities?
I think especially when you read his stance on bullfighting, I think he had some sexual issues he was grappling with, but he was a big bruiser. He was physically the opposite of
That's
Joyce.
Right.
And they both loved drinking, so they would hang out in Paris. They would get sauced. And apparently Joyce was the kind of guy who could be a little annoying at parties. He would start bar fights when he was drunk, pick fights with like random people, or just annoy them to the point where they said, hey, buddy, here's your chance. Shut up. And he would be like, no, furthermore, tiny, naughty little farties. And then they would be about to swing on him. And he would literally, this is true, he would run and hide behind the larger Ernest Hemingway.
That's right.
And he would yell, deal with him, Hemingway. Deal
yes.
with him.
Deal with him. He's going to hurt me.
Exactly.
Wow. Have you seen, what's that Woody Allen movie, Midnight in Paris?
Oh, it's been a while.
Hemingway's a character in it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Joyce is in it too. I can't remember, but it would certainly be referencing this period that we're talking about with all of these, you know, amazing literary figures. Because Paris, again, because they were just a lot more open about this stuff. Mm-hmm. So folks could hang and talk about this kind of stuff without fear of retribution or of societal, you know, kind of, exile or whatever it might be. So there was, you know, these salons or whatever. Who else was it? There was a woman.
Ezra Pound.
Ezra Pound is in it. And Gertrude Stein, you know, those types of figures were all kind of hanging out. And I don't quite remember if Joyce is featured in the film, but Hemingway definitely is. And so it might not align exactly, but Paris definitely seemed like a hotbed of this kind of
Google search. Yes. That according to Google, yes, Joyce is in the film.
Okay, great. I haven't seen it since it came out, but I do remember it being quite fun. And we've got Owen Wilson being the sort of Connecticut Yankee type figure, saying a lot of wows, you know, and having an interesting time.
And so with this, before we get into my perhaps polemical but entirely correct opinions about Finnegan's Wake, we're going to call it a day. We wanted to humanize stuff, you know, folks. Again, it's the end of the year. We're all getting a little more relaxed and loose, and we just thought farts are so funny. This guy wrote so amazingly well about farts. And also, I don't think he would object to us humanizing him a little bit.
You know, this makes me think of, too, since we're talking about Paris, isn't that where, like, the whole entertainment discipline of fartistry was kind of a thing?
Flatulous.
Yeah, there was I think we did an episode about it back in the day. It was this guy who could, like, whistle, like, tunes with his farts and do all kinds of tricks, fart tricks, whatever. I don't know.
And he played for big crowds, too.
He was very
everybody
popular.
Was into
hugely,
it.
Hugely popular. So I guess Paris was the place, man. And I've only had the pleasure of visiting Paris as an adult once. It's another thing, too, where, like, that's where the director Roman Polanski was able to kind of live when he was under fire in the United States for, let's just be real, sexually assaulting a minor. Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that the Parisian people are inherently debauched, but there is a certain laissez-faire attitude towards what other parts of the world might consider perversion.
Roman Polanski is a criminal and should answer for his crimes.
Fair.
I know we're a fun show, but I can't leave that unsaid. Like, and to the point about Paris and Parisians, yes, this is typically, especially in this time period, this is a font of cultural interaction. This is the world of the salon, of the great thoughts, the great movements, be they bowel movements or, you know, literary movements.
You had to go there, Ben.
We had to. We're almost at the end, my friend. We have to wonder how. Thank you, Max. I'm flipping.
That's also where Jim Morrison died in Paris. He loved Paris. I'm sorry, you said this is the end, my only friend.
And this is where also historically a lot of very prominent, very talented African-American people traveled to get away from the systemic racism of the United States. So we owe Paris a thank you, a merci beaucoup. We also got to tell you, Finnegan's Wake is overrated. Thanks, as always, to our
super. How do you really feel, though, about Finnegan's Wake, Ben?
Finnegan's Wake. I'm so glad you brought that up, Noel.
why'd you set him up?
There is a book club that has been studying Finnegan's Wake, I kid you not, for well over two decades. And when they were asked when they would be done, they said, well, you know, it just goes in a cycle. Because spoiler, it's impossible to spoil that book, but spoiler, the last sentence is the first part of the sentence that begins.
So it's like a loop.
The book. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It begins the opening of the book.
Sort of like that King Gizzard in the Lizard Wizard record, Nonagon Infinity.
Similar. And I like that
definitely
reference.
Definitely inspired by James Joyce. No, you can play that record on a loop and it loops back around on itself. It's pretty neat.
Those guys are great.
And again, look, let's just give credit where credit is due once again. The idea of messing with a pre-existing form, you know, whether it be the album, whether it be the book, you know, you have things like, what is it, House of Leaves, that really experiments with, like, typeset and you know, cyclical, like, writing that goes in spirals and all of these kinds of things. You can really thank, I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, James Joyce for pioneering that and for really kind of, you know, going out on a limb to allow others down the line to be able to successfully experiment with forms, whether it be literary, musical, cinematic, whatever. I think that's really important. The first person that gets known for being an experimenter like that and gets some success, that allows future generations to do that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, so shout out to the lost generation of the 1920s. That's not just Joyce and Pound and Stein and Hemingway. That's also folks like T.S. Eliot, who, by the way, is American. Sorry, T.S., everybody knows. Stop pretending to be British. Wow.
But the Jellicle cats,
they're Jellicle cats, man. People today. Okay, so we're going to pause. Big, big thanks, of course, to our
Jellicle cat,
our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Big, big thanks to our returning guest, Alex Circa. Alex, how'd we do?
I mean, that was exciting. I'm on the edge of my seat over here.
Okay. Oh, boy. Nice. All right.
Who else? This is good stuff, Ben. You know, really, thanks to Ben, of course, as always, for being here and doing the show, but also for being the research associate on this particularly naughty, body haughty piece of research.
And thanks to you as well, Mr. Brown. Come back, folks. We're going to have some more episodes as we get closer toward the end of the year. Spoiler alert. You might learn some etymology about some very strange diseases. But there will be other stuff, too. We can't wait for you to hear it. So join up with us very, very soon.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.